Well, it's good to see everybody. Those of you joining us on television, online, in the room, in our churches all over the country, now all over the world. It's pretty exciting. We're glad that you're here. And if this is your first time or your first time to join us, wherever you are, we're at the tail end of a series called Ask It. And so next week is the last one. You won't want to miss that. But if you have not kept up with us, you can go to justaskit.org, and all of these messages are posted there. You can watch them as many times as you want for free forever. And if you're in a group or thinking about starting a small group in your home or your fraternity or sorority, we have little PDF files you can download for each of these messages. There are questions there. You can look like the expert, or you can actually tell them that you stole those from us. But either way, we've provided those so you can have discussions around these topics, because we think these are really important topics, and especially this series, because we're teaching you one question and we're coming back to this question over and over and over again. And the reason we're spending 6 weeks on it is we want this to be a question you ask for the rest of your life. And the question, or the series title, is Ask It, and the subtitle is The Question That Answers Just About Everything, because we really believe this question answers just about everything. And the question is, before we put it on the screen, what's the question? Anybody? Very good. What's the wise thing to do? Let's say all together, what's the right? Then we looked at this question in sort of a three-dimensional way, and we ask it this way: in light of my past experience, my current circumstances, and my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do? All of us have a different past. All of us are in a different stage of life. All of us have different hopes and dreams, and what's right for you or what's wise for you may not be wise for me. This question takes us beyond simple right and wrong. This question takes us beyond what's legal. This question takes us beyond the lowest common denominator. This question takes us to a place where, if we're honest with ourselves and if we allow God to take this question and drive it to the deepest part of our lives, it enables us and empowers us, as many of you have already experienced, to really get the full potential out of your life and to reach the full potential that God has for you. Now, if you are a Christian, you're actually required to ask this question. If you're not a Christian, or you're not somebody who's following Jesus, and you still have lots of questions about that and the whole God thing, we get that. We built this place for you. But you are invited to ask the question. But Christians, we're required to ask the question. As we saw at the very first part of this series, that we've been instructed to live at the level of wisdom and to say, Heavenly Father, in light of my past experience, things I dealt with, the family I grew up with, the temptations I'm prone to, in light of my current circumstances, my current stage of life, just got married, just went through a divorce, just got into a relationship, just got out of a relationship, just got a new job, just moved to the big city, just had our first child, facing an illness, whatever your current circumstances are, and in light of my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for me to do? Now, all of us have regret. All of us would like to go back to a season of our life, or a weekend of our life, or a spring break of our life, or a previous city in our life, or a previous marriage in our life, and ask this question, but we didn't get to. But when we look back on those seasons of our lives, and when we look back on our greatest regrets, and I thought maybe we could start today by just turning to the person next to you that you don't know and sharing your greatest regrets to kind of get the emotions going, you know? But that would be a silent 2 or 3 minutes. So anyway, when you think about your greatest regrets, which is the last thing you want to think about on a day like today, the truth is, when you look back, you ask yourself a question kind of like this: how could I have been so, and this is our word, foolish or unwise? How could I have been so foolish? Or maybe you thought it this way: I should have seen it coming. I should have seen it coming. I just got some groans, like, yeah. It's like, it's so, looking back, hindsight really is 20/20. It's like, I should have seen it coming. I mean, if I had paid attention to all those things she said, she gave me so many clues. If I had paid attention to all those things he said, he gave me so many clues. You know, when they interviewed me, there were so many clues. How did I miss them? I mean, the salesman, I mean, if I had listened carefully, there were so many clues. This wasn't a great idea. You know, 0% financing. My mom warned me about that. My dad warned me about that. You know, they said that the more you spend, the more you save. So I thought I had like a savings account. You know, I should have seen that coming. They said the more you spend, the more you earn. I thought, I have a job. You didn't get that. The more you spend, the more you earn. Do you get any of those certificates? And you think, oh my gosh, I work there. No, it's worked that way. So anyway, all of us look back and we think, I should have seen this coming. So here's the thing about should have seen it coming. This is what I want to talk about for the next few minutes. Just this phrase, should have seen it coming. If you should have seen it coming, chances are there was someone in your life who did see it coming. If you should have seen it coming, in other words, when you look back and you look at the circumstances in which you made that terrible decision, that unwise decision, you got in that relationship, got out of a relationship, you know, spent that money, whatever it was. If you look back and you think, oh, I should have seen it coming, then chances are somebody in your life did see it coming. And either you didn't listen or no one warned you. And the reason they probably didn't warn you is because they didn't think you would what? Listen. You guys are smart. That's exactly right. He said, hey, why don't you go? And I think you should tell her. I'm not going to tell her. Well, you tell her. I'm not going to tell her. Why? Well, she won't listen. Yeah, let's still say anything. What if we all go together? What if we have like an intervention and we'll all show up at his house, you know, and we'll stand outside and say, you can't marry her. Or, you know, don't take that job. And it's like, he won't listen. But I guarantee you in the big areas of your life where you look back and you think, why didn't I see it coming? Why didn't I see it coming? Somebody saw it coming. If you're 18 years old or 17 years old, you know, and you're kind of dealing with the thing in high school or your first year of college, and you're thinking, how could I have been so foolish? I should have seen it coming. I guarantee you somebody at home saw it coming. And they try to creep up on you and find the right approach. Honey, you know, they went in your room, you know, and sat there quietly for a while or tried to bring it up at dinner. Maybe your dad's like took the direct approach, you know. I mean, somebody saw it coming. In fact, if you're a student and you still live at home, this is the challenge between you and your parents. Your parents, I mean, they can't help it, especially your mama. They see everything coming. They see your whole life coming. They have your whole life planned for you in the back of their mind. I mean, they've picked out dresses and stuff, okay? So they see it coming, and it's so difficult to listen, right? Because somebody in your life sees it coming. So if that's true, if we should have seen it coming and either we didn't listen or nobody warned us, then here's the question that we need to ask, and this is a big, big question. This sets us up for where we're gonna go today. Why is it that we can't see it coming, but somebody else can? Let me turn it around. Why can I see trouble coming in your life, but you can't? And why is it that you can see trouble coming my way, but I can't? Why is it I know exactly what you should do, but you don't? And why is it if I told you my story, you would know exactly what I should do, but I don't? And what can we do about that? Because I'm like you, I don't want to get to another season of my life and look back on this season and go, how could I have been so foolish? Why didn't I see it coming? I don't want to look back on my life like you don't. I don't want to look back at a busted relationship or a bad financial decision or a bad professional decision or a bad parenting decision where you overreacted or you underreacted, you overparented, you underparented. You know, you just decided, you know, we're going to move in, we're going to make this work, and you look back and you think, why? I should have seen that coming. I don't want to look back on any more of those. You don't want to look back on any more of those. But the truth is, there's just some things you just can't see them coming. You really can't. But somebody can. But why is that? Here's why, or here's part of the reason why. Emotionally charged environments are not ideal for decision making. And just about every decision making environment is emotionally charged, especially the big ones. Isn't that true? Emotionally charged environments are not great for decision making, and yet every big decision involves emotions. So what happens is our emotions make what's obvious less obvious. So when it's you, the emotions just kind of fog the entire decision-making process. Because it's me, I'm not messed up by your emotions. I can see clearly now. The rain is gone. You are in the middle of the storm. I can see above the clouds. No obstacles in my way. You are just surrounded by obstacles. And you're going, oh my gosh, what should I do? What should I do? And all your friends are like, really? You can't see? And you're like, no, I can't see. And it's why. Here's why. Because emotions make decisions difficult, and every major decision is fraught with the peril of emotion. This is why I would do a way better job managing your money than you ever will. I will never make an impulse buy with your money. And you'd say, hey, Andy, can I spend some of my money on that? And I'd say, no, that's a bad decision. But please, nope. But I want it. I mean, every parent, you see this situation, you can't take your kids to the store, right? Because they put all everything down about this high that kids want. Have you noticed that? And what happens? You don't even see this if your kids are like walking with candy and stupid toys and waste of money, you know, and it's like, and what happens? As soon as they put it in their hand, they feel ownership. And what happens? There's emotion. Mom, dad, and you're the mom, dad, you control the money. It's like, we're not wasting our money on that stupid whatever that is, right? You've got 12 of those at home. You already broke the last three, and then there's an argument that breaks out, and you have such great objectivity. You are able to make way better financial decisions for your kids because you control the money and you make good decisions. Did you know that you never, ever outgrow that? That as soon as your emotions get attached to a thing, you are prone to make a bad financial decision. If I was holding your wallet, if I had your checkbook, I would say, you don't need that. Let's go home. You already have one of those. You don't even remember what you got last year for Christmas, do you? Or the year before, or the year before. Remember all that nice, new, shiny technology you had, and now it's old, and you don't even know where it is? We're not getting any more of those. I'd just take you right home. I'd make way better decisions about your money than you would. And the same holds true for you, and here's why. Why? Because the financial decisions are not emotionally neutral decisions. Same with marriage. You know what? I mean, I don't do marriage counseling because I'm terrible, because I'm not patient enough to listen. I just think there's three problems, and once I know what yours is, I go, shh, let me talk, okay? So I don't do marriage counseling. I give advice. Nobody takes it anyway, so I just give it all at once to all of you, then go home. So hopefully take some of this. But why is it? But you don't have to be brilliant, okay? Any of you, even single or married, you could sit in a counselor's office, and you can listen to a couple explain their problems, and you would sit there and think, well, it's obvious. Stop doing that. I mean, it's, you know, whenever he, okay, sir, don't do that anymore. And whenever she, don't. It's simple, isn't it? Why is it that I can fix your marriage in about two paragraphs, but my marriage issues go on for year after year after year? Why can't I see it coming? Why can you see it coming? Same true with our kids, right? I mean, don't you know exactly what your neighbors need to do with their kids? Isn't it obvious? If that was my son, I'd do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If that was my daughter, I would never let. You don't even have kids. You're single, you don't have kids yet, and you look at the way parents do with their kids, you're like, I would never. You know all about raising kids. You do. I mean, it's just so clear to you. But then you have your own, and you live in a fog for about 18 years. I mean, you do. Sandra and I look at each other. It's like, what do we do? I'm like, I don't know. We go huddle together in my office, go, okay, we don't want to do the wrong thing. So listen, you know, we got to find the right approach. Can't take the direct approach. You know, that'll crush her. You know, can't kind of skirt around the issue, or he'll just get bored and leave. You know, what's the right approach? And you think, why is this so difficult? It was so easy before we had kids. In fact, I know what all my neighbors should do with their kids. But why is it so hard? Because parenting is emotional. Marriage is emotional. Money is emotional. And it's why we look back and we have extraordinary clarity. We go, why didn't I see it? Because you were in the middle of it. And the emotion fogs our judgment, because there's lust and there's anger and there's greed and there's jealousy and there's, you know, there's bitterness and I'm envious and I'm, you know, there's just all of these emotions, and we're trying to make a decision. So where's the question? What is a wise person? Because we're trying to be wise, right? What's the wise thing to do when emotions are high and appetites are inflamed? What is the wise thing to do when emotions are high and our appetites are inflamed? What's the wise thing to do if we really want to look back and say, I made the wise decision? A lot of my past experience, my current circumstances, my future hopes and dreams, I really want to make wise decisions. I want to live with fewer regrets, fewer tears. I don't want to waste any more money, but I don't know what to do because this is an emotional situation. What does a wise person do in an emotionally charged environment where our appetites are awakened and suddenly we've got our eyes or our heart or something on somebody or on something, and suddenly there's a decision to make? The answer is one word, and it's the word listen. 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 Because you don't see it coming, but I guarantee you somebody sees it coming. And the wise person listens. In fact, wise people recognize when they are in no condition to decide for themselves, by themselves. Wise people are the ones that hit the pause button and go, uh-oh, this is emotional. I'm probably going to make the wrong decision. Uh-oh, I'm mad. I need some advice. Uh-oh, I am so lonely and I am so prone to, you know, fill in the blank. I probably need to listen. Wise people know when they are in no condition to decide for themselves, by themselves. Now, I could just stop the message here, and we could all think of a time in our life and we knew this was exactly right, and we think back and go, that's exactly it. I remember a when, and whoo, do I remember that when. And I didn't hit the pause button. I just kind of went with the flow. I kind of went with my emotions. I followed my heart, which is a terrible idea, but you know, that's what we do. And consequently, you ended up in a place, you look back and you say, I should have seen it coming. Somebody saw it coming. And the key to responding to situations where you think you might not see what's coming is to listen to somebody who does. Now, that brings us to the Bible part, because every sermon there's a Bible part. Now, if you're not a Bible person, this is a great Sunday because we're in the Old Testament. So if the whole Jesus thing kind of bothers you, we're not going to get to Jesus. We're in the Old Testament. He's later. So take this seriously. We're talking about a king. Everybody wants to be a king, right? And not only that, here's the cool thing. The wisest man who ever lived, other than Jesus, I guess, I would assume, the wisest man who ever lived was a king named Solomon. He was the third king of Israel, David's son. He lived during the golden age of Israel, where Israel had as much power as they would ever have. Their armies were as powerful as they would ever be. Their reach in terms of land acquisition was as broad as it would ever be. And God, as we're going to see in a minute, God gave Solomon the gift of wisdom. He didn't learn it the hard way like the rest of us. He didn't learn it by experience. God said, you know what? I'm going to give some people the ability to just hear a song and play it on the piano. I'm going to give some people the ability to just look at a math problem and just see the answer. And Solomon, I'm giving you the gift of wisdom. He was so wise. He was so wise that his reputation wasn't simply rich, even though he was rich. His reputation wasn't simply powerful, although he was powerful. His reputation was wise. In fact, here's what the scripture tells us in the book of 1 Kings. It's an interesting story. It says, God gave Solomon wisdom. I mean, that's just not even fair, is it? It's like you just gave it to him. Yep, as a kid, as a teenager. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. And his fame, check this out, and his fame spread all to all the surrounding nations. That Solomon, the king of Israel, was known for his wisdom. From all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. So when kings in other nations were making a big decision, they'd say, I know who we need to talk to. We need to talk to Solomon. So they'd call in one of their guys, load him up with a bunch of gold and silver, and say, go to Israel, go to Jerusalem, and get in line and hand him my question, because that's the guy who's going to give us the answer that we've been looking for. He was that wise. People lined up. In some cases, they would stay for days or even months to wait to have just a short audience with King Solomon, because he could hear a situation, and his judgment was impeccable. His understanding of the sciences, of math, of all the arts. It was incredible. He just had extraordinary, extraordinary wisdom. Now, here's the good news. You don't have to get in line, because he wrote a bunch of this stuff down. He wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, which if you're over 40, you love. If you're under 40, you think, why is this even in here, okay? He wrote the Song of Solomon, which is all about sex, okay? You had to be of a certain age for Jewish boys to even read Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon was, you know, at night, the boys would creep into their father's office, you know, and find the Old Testament and look for Song of Solomon and giggle, okay? That was Song of Solomon. That's in the scriptures. You should read the Bible. And then he also wrote the book of Proverbs. And in the book of Proverbs, Solomon draws from his vast wisdom that God gave him, and he gives us these bunch of one-liners, things you put on a calendar, something you put at the bottom of your letterhead, for your office stationery. All these one-liners. And here's the interesting thing. The wisest man in the world said more about seeking counsel than any other ancient writer. The wisest man in the world said more about seeking counsel than any other biblical writer. The man who needed counsel the least, Solomon, spoke and wrote about it the most. Because the wisest man in the world knew this. There are going to be situations, and you aren't going to see it coming, but somebody will. And if you are wise enough to invite them into the decision-making process, you will gain the clarity you need to make the decision that ultimately you'll be glad that you made. Here are some of the tidbits. In fact, if you have never read the Bible before, or you're not a Bible reader, or you're like, that's what my grandmother reads, you know, we don't do that at our house, I want to dare you. In fact, you can just download a version of the Bible on your mobile any mobile device. YouVersion. YouVersion is a great free Bible. Download YouVersion and just start reading Proverbs. You can read one proverb a day. He wrote it so they could be read in a month. One proverb a day, one chapter a day. But here are some of the just snapshots from the book of Proverbs. Here's what he says. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser still. In other words, speak to, counsel, advise the wise, and they will be wiser still. Check this out. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire, or this word can mean seek out, or in our case, pay for, get a consultant, bring in a counselor, go see a counselor, and a wise man will acquire wise counsel. Then look at this one. Here's kind of the negative twist on the same thing. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. I mean, you know, that you've been in this situation. You know people like this. It's like they know everything. Well, I guess you just know everything. Well, I do. Have you ever said to somebody, well, you're just never wrong, are you? And they pause and go, no, I'm not. Okay, it's like that's a fool. They really don't think they're ever wrong. They're not lying. They just try to think back to a time in their life when they were wrong, and they just can't think of one. So a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. A fool is right in his own eyes. That is, I don't need any outside advice. I see everything I need to see. I see what's coming. I can make decisions all by myself. He says, but a wise man isn't the person that needs counsel. A wise person isn't the one that realizes, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. A wise person is the one who listens to counsel. They never think that they're so wise that they don't need any outside input. Plans fail. You may have heard this one before. Plans fail for a lack of counsel. But with many advisors, they succeed. Now, this is amazing that Solomon wrote something like this. This would be like the smartest person you know who has like an IQ that's just off the chart talking about the importance of education. You'd be like, you didn't even go to school. You're just born smart. Why is education important? It'd be like the most talented musician you've ever met. Somebody who can pick up any instrument and they just play it. They can hear a song and they can just play it on any instrument and any key. It would be like that person telling you the importance of taking piano lessons. You'd be like, why would you be all about piano lessons? You never took a lesson in your life. So here's the wisest man in the world who says, here's my counsel. Get many advisors. Don't go it alone. Don't think that you are so wise and so smart that you can see all the eventualities. Invite people in to give you advice. A couple more. He says this, listen to advice and accept discipline, that is correction, like I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't call her, I wouldn't go over there, I wouldn't take that job. Wait a minute, but I'm all, you know, I'm packed, I know, but I'm just telling you, I wouldn't do it. Listen to advice and accept discipline, and at the end, future hopes and dreams, and at the end, you will be counted among the wise. Now, this is a fascinating verse too. It doesn't say, hey, wise people. It says, would you like to be wise? Yeah. Well, then listen to counsel and you will be considered wise. You'll know different. You'll know, I'm such an idiot, but you'll make great decisions. And if you make great decisions with great outcomes, people will think that you're wise. Now, listen to this one. Where there is strife, this is a relational proverb. Where there is strife, there is pride. Where there is strife, there is pride. Parent to teacher, you know, parent to kid, kid to kid, husband to wife, boyfriend to girlfriend, boss to employee. Where there is strife, there is pride. But wisdom is found in those who take advice. Now, here's the strange thing. If you were going to start reading the Bible and you read the book of Proverbs, you might also want to find the book of 1 Kings, because the book of 1 Kings is where you find the story of Solomon. And the story of Solomon starts off really well. He says, God, I'm a kid and I got to rule this nation. And God says, I'll give you anything you want. And Solomon says, I'll tell you what I'll take. PlayStation, no. Wisdom and understanding. God says, you got it. So it starts off really good. He asks for wisdom, wisdom, wisdom. And then at the end, Solomon ignores his own advice. And Solomon starts going it on his own. Because Solomon begins to think, hey, if the whole world lines up to hear from me, why should I ask anybody anything? And even though he spent his career saying, no matter how wise you are, you're not wise enough. No matter how wise you are, you always need outside input. No matter how smart you are, pause and invite people in, especially in those things that have to do with money and relationships. Toward the end of his life, he decided, since I'm the wisest person in the world, I don't need to listen to anybody. And he made terrible decisions. In fact, the summary of his life is one of the wisest men who ever lived made some of the dumbest decisions ever made. One of the wisest men who ever lived. made some of the dumbest decisions ever made. He wrecked the economy of Israel, even though it's as strong as it had ever been. He undermined the military authority of Israel, even though it was as strong as it had ever been. And he set the next generation of his family up for failure because of decisions that he made and treaties that he decided between Israel and the surrounding nations. The prophets warned him. The law of God warned him. People around him would have warned him if he had listened, but he decided, I'm the smartest person in the room. People line up to hear me. Why would I listen to anybody on the outside? And this is what he did. He did what many of us are prone to do. He undermined his own success. And in his case, maybe in your case, he undermined his own legacy. Now, here's what I know, because you're smart. If you watch, if you're part of our churches, our network of churches, you're smart. We attract smart people. If this is your first time and you're like, you know what, I really like it, it's because you're smart. We have smart, wise, successful people. You are, and if you hang around, you'll get smarter and wiser. We just kind of feed off of each other. So here's what I know about you, okay? Here's what I know about you. I have not said anything so far that you haven't heard before. Nobody's going, ask for advice? That's brilliant. Oh my gosh, this guy's good. Ask for advice. Right? I mean, if you're a teenager, a college student, it's like, I know, my parents have been telling me that my whole life, you know. Some of you are consultants. You're like, I'm going to use this. I'm going to use this, okay? Some of you hire consultants because you know this. This is not rocket science. This is not new. This isn't unique. But the question is, why don't we do this? I mean, we know this. Why? We all have enough stories of, I should have seen it coming, I should have seen it coming, I should have seen it coming. All of us would probably agree, I bet somebody saw it coming, I bet somebody saw it coming, I bet somebody saw it coming. Why didn't I listen? And why didn't anybody feel like they had the permission to talk to me? Why do we do this? And how do we keep this from happening again? And we all know that decision-making environments are full of emotion, and emotion fogs our ability to reason. We know all this. So why are we, especially some of us men. I mean, come on, guys. They make fun of us because we won't stop and ask for directions when we're lost driving. Let's be honest. We don't stop and ask for directions about anything in any area of life, right? Especially we're not going to ask the people that, you know, live with us and that we support because, you know, we're supposed to know everything and be smarter than everybody else. I mean, it's just in us not to do this. So why would we ignore a principle that's so apparent and that we have benefited from, and that even as I speak, some of us are a little bit nervous because it's like, I know. I think there's several reasons. One is this, okay? One is, we already know what the wise people are going to say, and we just don't want to hear it, right? I mean, didn't we spend about 12 to 20 with this mindset right here? In other words, Andy, I'll tell you why I don't ask for advice. I already know the answer. I already know what they're going to say. Now, let me be a little bit harsh, okay, and direct with you for just a second. Solomon, the wisest man in the world who told us all of this, Solomon, the wisest man who didn't take his own advice and undermine his own authority, Solomon says that if you know what to do and you just don't do it, he has a term for that. He says, I'll let you say it. He says, you're a fool. That's right. That's what a fool is. A fool is a person who knows the difference between right and wrong and just chooses to do what's wrong. So if you're one of those people who you're right now in the middle of a decision and you kind of, you don't have to do what would Jesus do. You don't even have to take it that far. You know, what would my mom tell me to do? What would my dad tell me to do? What would my boss tell me? What would my best friend tell me? What would my husband, my wife? If you already know what the wise people in your life would tell you to do and you've just decided not to do it, you're a fool and you'll pay for that. Some more. Okay? Now, well, I think there's another reason. One of the other reasons we don't do this is we think it's nobody's business. Okay, it's my money. It's my marriage. These are my kids. This is my job. This is my career. This is my company. It's nobody else's business. So I'm not going to ask for advice. I'm not going to listen to advice. And don't knock on my door. And I don't even read your stupid emails, okay? So leave me alone. It's none of your... Pray for me. How about that? Just pray for me. But don't talk to me, okay? Because this is my decision. How many times have you said this? This is my decision. I have to decide this for myself. The problem with that is, and you know this, is that private decisions have public consequences. Okay, look. What's made in private doesn't stay in private. Private decisions don't stay private. Okay, public, you know, personal decisions impact more than just your person, especially if you're married, especially if you're a parent, especially if you're a boss. Think about this for just a minute before we move on. Every public scandal, Every public scandal, the ones that you can't wait to get home in the afternoon, turn on the television to see what did they do today? You know, what stupid thing has he said today? What's up with her next, you know? Whether it's politicians or musicians or performers or actors, you know, actors, actresses, or just people in the community, you know, public scandal. Think about this. Every public scandal started with a private decision. All of them. Every embarrassing thing known about everybody who's known, anybody knows about that they did something embarrassing. Every single one of those embarrassing things, every one of those revelations began with a personal, private decision. All of them. Private decisions have public consequences. Personal decisions don't stay personal, and they involve and impact more people than you. Now, that's not new information either, is it? And yet there's still this thing in us that's like, you know, I can figure this out and I can get through this and I'm smart enough and leave me alone. So what is that? In the New Testament and the Old Testament tell us, common sense tells us, it's this word, it's pride. It's pride that I don't need to be told what to do and nobody's going to tell me what to do. And I don't need to be told what to do. I'm a grown-up. I'm 17 years old. And I'm not knocking 17-year-olds, but when we were 17, we didn't need anybody to tell us what to do, right? Then we look back and we laugh, right? Then we look back on 21 and laugh. Then we look back on 31. And regardless of how old you are, you're going to look back on this stage of life and go, oh, what was I thinking? Remember what Solomon said? He says, where there is strife, there is what? There's pride. But wisdom is found for those and in those and with those who take advice. So let's talk about this for just a second. Two statements and we'll wrap this up. Success is intoxicating and failure is humiliating. Success is intoxicating. Failure is humiliating. This goes to the root of how our pride and why our pride keeps us from acknowledging and accepting and embracing outside counsel. If you're super successful, the way the world works is after a while, everybody will think you are smart about everything. Isn't that true? You ever been in a room where there's like a super, super rich person? I mean, they're like, it's like, you have a nice car, but they have like a nice jet. Okay, so, whoa, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they're just in a different, and if you have a nice jet, I am so happy that you're part of our congregation, you know? So I'm not knocking it. Don't sell your jet. You know, it's great. All I'm saying is, and if you're the person with the jet, you know this. When you walk in the room, especially if you're a man, okay, you're like the prettiest girl in the room. Everybody knows you're there. And they think you're way more handsome than you actually are because money makes you better looking. It just does. You know how this works. You're the most powerful, successful person in the room. And have you ever stood with a little group, a little posse, you know, around a super wealthy or well-known person? Have you noticed that everything they say is true? And everything that's kind of funny is real funny. And every piece of advice, everybody's like this. Because success, and I'm not knocking super rich people, success is intoxicating. And what happens is people come around super successful people and they just intoxicate them even more. It's very difficult to survive success. Because after a while, you begin to think you know a lot about everything. And so why in the world would you seek advice about anything? You had parents. You don't need to read a book about parenting. I was a kid once. I don't need to read a book about raising kids. I had surgery once. See, it doesn't work, does it? See, success is intoxicating. I'm going to move on. Here's what happens. If you are super successful or even marginally successful, or you're recognized in your field or your industry as being successful, your inclination will be to think, you know what, since I know a lot about this, I'm kind of an expert on all matters, and you will naturally resist outside input, and you will naturally resist inviting feedback, and you will naturally resist counsel, and you will really resist going to a counselor. And your husband or your wife starts saying, honey, maybe. And it's like, no, we'll figure this out. No, here's what we say. I got this. I got this. I got this. I got this. And the flip side is true as well. Failure is humiliating. You know what? You know, maybe the worst thing for a man to feel, and I guess for a woman too, but I can only speak from my perspective. The worst thing for a man to feel is inadequate. And let me tell you what men do, and ladies. You should understand this because this may explain something you've noticed with your sons or your grandsons or your husband or your boyfriend. If there's an area in our life where we feel inadequate, we're not doing so well, and then you come along, here's what you think. You think, oh, you're not doing so well. So I've got a book about the thing you're not doing so well in. So if you would read this book, you would do better. You would do weller at what you're not doing so well. And why is it when I give you that book or slide it over there? In fact, I've already read it and I've already highlighted it. So it's only going to take you half as long to read this as it did me because I've got it. We're ready to go. Why is, ladies, have you ever wondered why is it when you slide it our way or say, listen to this tape or watch this DVD or maybe we can go to this conference or this marriage thing and you're thinking, okay, you know you're not doing so well with this. I know you're not doing so well with this. So I'm going to try to help you do weller with it. Why is it you resist me? Here's why. Because anything that reminds me of my inadequacy is something I am naturally going to resist. Even the solution to my inadequacy. Isn't that weird? Here, man, this is what we do. You're in sales and you're good. You're a pretty good salesperson. You're an extraordinary salesperson. So you go to sales conferences. You're already good at that. You're a manager. You love reading stuff about managing. You're a leader. Or maybe you're an entrepreneur or you founded a company and you love to read more and more and more and more and more about stuff that you're good at. In fact, somebody comes along with a leadership book. You don't go, ha, I don't need that. I'm a leader. You go, oh, I can't get enough of that. Then somebody comes along and tries to feed information into an area where you feel inadequate, and we resist that. Do you know what that is? It's that. And that will undermine all of your success. It's what happened to Solomon. So here's our problem. Success is intoxicating. Woo, I know everything about everything. That's extreme. Failure is humiliating. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. I'm not going to a counselor. I'm not going to read a stupid book. I'm going to figure this out. I have to figure it out on my own so I'll feel good about myself. And God says, no, I didn't design you that way. You were born into community. You need community. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason. You grew up hearing that your whole life, and it's true. And the only way for you to emerge from your inadequacy, the only way for you to experience success where you experience maybe nothing but failure, the only way to come out of that hole where every time somebody mentions it, it just drives you further, is to invite someone into your area of weakness with you and learn to listen. Because where there is conflict, there is pride. So, I should have seen it coming. Should have seen it coming. Somebody saw it coming. Somebody can see what you can't see. Are you going to invite them in? Somebody can see what you're pretending not to see. Are you willing to invite them in? See, wise people know what they don't know, and they're not afraid to engage the people who know. Wise people know what they don't know, and they're not intimidated, and they're not afraid, and they're not too prideful to go to the people who know. Wise people know when the emotion and the appetites are so enraged and so inflamed that they better hit the pause button and invite someone in to the conversation with them. So, in light of your past experience, your current circumstances, and your future hopes and dreams, listen. And God will use the voices of other people to guide you and to guard you and to ensure that you never have to look back on another season, another episode, another relationship, another expenditure in your life and wonder, why didn't I see that coming? Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for preserving this ancient text for 3,000 years. And it's so relevant. And Father, I just confess on behalf of all of us, we all have enough pride in us to cause us to miss the signals, to miss those very things that we shouldn't miss. So would you please give us the wisdom we need to know what to do and then the courage to do it? And Father, I pray for the man or the woman who's here with a husband or a wife or a significant other or maybe even a parent. And as I was talking, they knew exactly where this was to land with them. Would you give them the courage even this day, to open up and say, I'm ready to listen. Please give us wisdom to know what to do, the courage to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.